Welcome to Altruistically Speaking, the show dedicated to hope, inspiration, and our future. Each week, Altruistically Speaking brings you the people, organizations, and companies that are helping to change the world and show you that everyone can make a difference. You can trust that there will always be good in the world. And now, here's your host, David Tomlinson.
Hi there. Welcome to Altruistically Speaking. This is Dave Tomlinson, and as always, we are coming to you from Burlington, Vermont. Altruistically Speaking is the podcast of hope, of inspiration on our future. We are talking every week to the people, the organizations, the companies that are out changing the world. On today's show, I talk with Malahat Mazahir of Sahar Education International, also known as just Sahar. And they are dealing with the education of girls in Afghanistan. When girls are educated, communities are stronger, they're safer, they're healthier. Right now, too many girls are not getting the chances they deserve to reach their full potential. So many girls in Afghanistan are still pretty far behind in the access to education, thanks to years of Taliban rule and just the basic stigma against girls' education. There's also a tremendous lack of facilities, and you know, when you take into account early marriage as well, it really keeps the girls from being in school. This is where Sahar comes in. They're working with partners in the U.S. and on the ground in Afghanistan to build and supply schools. They're working with educational and vocational training programs, early marriage prevention programs, to help girls empower themselves, feel better about themselves, be educated. This is really helping local economies and strengthening communities, and it's really helping the communication and the connections between Afghanistan and the West. My first question in the interview was about the name Sahar and where it came from.
It's Afghan, and it means dawn of the day, or start of the day. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of like a new day in Afghanistan. Yeah.
That's okay. So where did the idea come from to start the company?
So it originally started with a lawyer in Seattle. I think she was directly affected by the 9/11 attack. And so she wanted to focus on how she can reach out to Afghans and how she can help out because they have suffered so much through decades of war. And one of her way of reaching out was to help with education in Afghanistan. And that's how the group started. Yeah, and her name is Julia Boltz. She's not involved with the group anymore, but that's how she started.
In talking to different people about when I mentioned that I was going to be talking to, I think the initial reaction is, you know, I think, and it's the place a lot of people go to, is like, yeah, but what about the Taliban? So when Sahar first started, was that an issue, being able to educate women?
Well, it depends which part of Afghanistan you are in, because definitely Taliban are still in Afghanistan. They're still fighting with the government and the international forces. But we work in the north part of Afghanistan, which has been, comparatively speaking, very much better than the rest of the country. Until recently, hadn't been... you know, there hadn't been any fighting since 2001, but recently there have been some activities and some attacks, but it's been minor. So it depends which part of the country you work in. And so because we work in the north, it's much safer and it's easier to work there and have an impact and be able to send girls to school. But if you're in, if you're in the south part of Afghanistan, it's very hard. You rarely see girls going to school. It's harder for an organization like us to work in that part of the country. So I think we've been just lucky to be in a location that we can, that we are able to have this impact and be able to send girls to school and have educational tools for them.
Right. And so is that by choice, starting in the north because it was going to be easier?
I think so, yes.
How do you go about... and introducing the idea of education to communities and getting girls started in that?
It depends. I guess in the north for us, for example, usually people are willing to send their daughters to school, you know. What they're lacking is a school, for example. And then that's where we come in. We we build schools, for example, and then we repair some schools that need rebuilding or reconstruction or just some repairments. So in that sense, the story is a little different than what you would usually hear. And of course, Afghanistan is still a country that has this, you know, it's still one of the most dangerous countries for women. But at the same time, parts of Afghanistan are, you know, people are striving to get education, are willing to send their daughters to go to school to get education. And a lot of times, it's not that we have to go and beg people to, you know, send your daughters to school, but more likely they will come and ask for school. And it's different, for example, if we do activities like our early marriage program, then we have to reach out to the community. But if it's just schooling, then it's, especially in the north part, it's easier to get people to go to school because a lot of them are either immigrants from Iran or Pakistan, and they have had exposure to education and are willing to send their daughters to school, or they're just, you know, in general, more open to sending their girls to school because the security is better, and then there are schools for girls to go attend.
When you need to actually build a school, is it how challenging or easy is it to get the resources to be able to go ahead and actually build a school, or do you mostly refurbish buildings that are already there?
Yeah, so when we do repairments, that's the buildings that are already there. But the school that we built, for example, that was opened 2 years ago in the north, that was, you know, there had been a school, but it was destroyed for many years, and then they put another building up. So that was a completely different, you know, school. And yes, a lot of the fundings we do in the U.S., so we raise funds for it. Usually it's, you know, some larger donors and some smaller donors. And we also partner with other organizations. For example, the University of Washington, we partnered with their architecture school. And they did the design and, you know, what works in Afghanistan, for example, and what could be sustainable in Afghanistan and things like that, and considering the culture and everything. So they come up with the designs, and then we go to Afghanistan and we hire the local people, and then they construct it and they build the school. So it's a partnership between many, many groups that makes this whole project more fun and, you know, more inclusive to the local community as well, as right. well as the community here in Seattle, or in general, bigger community of the U.S.
And I would imagine if you're including the local community over in Afghanistan, that has to be making them feel better and more involved as well.
Exactly. That's one way. And also it's a good way of also providing job opportunities, because another problem back in Afghanistan is the lack of job opportunities for a lot of people. So this is also one way of, you know, although temporary, but still people get to have jobs in their local community that we are building the school in.
Right. You mentioned it a couple of minutes ago about the early marriage program. I thought that was interesting to me. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. I would love to, because that's one of the projects that I work very closely with here. And the motivation behind the early marriage prevention initiative was that a lot of the schools we worked with, girls would drop out of school at a very young age when they were 10 or 11 or 12 to be married off. Usually it was their parents' decision. So that was really uncomfortable for us to be losing girls at such a young age from school. And that's when the organization came up with this idea of this initiative to prevent this by providing certain strategies and processes that we could work with girls in school. So some statistics say that about 60% of the girls in Afghanistan get married even before the age of 16. And 16 is the legal age to get married in Afghanistan. So a lot of, most of the population gets married, you know, below age 16, which is a very young age, and especially you're still in school. And if you don't go through school, you're more dependent on anybody else. You can't be independent as a woman. So that's another hurdle that they face later on in life. And it's estimated that about 80% of all marriages in Afghanistan, or especially in rural areas and poorer areas, are forced marriages. So we definitely felt the need to, you know, have such a program. And early marriage practice has been going on in different regions of the world differently. And so South Asia, and a lot of times Afghanistan is categorized as a South Asian country in this matter, but usually geographically we classify it as a Central Asian country. So in Afghanistan, the practice is because of poverty, lack of education, cultural practices, you know, lack of understanding of their rights, and also insecurity. All these factors contribute to the early marriage practices in Afghanistan. So what we do is we work with girls from 5th grade until 12th grade, so about age 12 until 18 or 19. And we have a curriculum that we have made here in Seattle with the Afghan women. So one was a fellow in Seattle and then other staff in Afghanistan who came up with the curriculum. And this curriculum talks about different issues with these girls, about their rights in under the international law. So what are the human rights saying about women's role, and what rights could they have as women and as girls? Which kind of rights are given to them under the constitution of the under the constitution of Afghanistan, for example? Which kind of rights are given in Islam to them and in the Quran? Because a lot of times I feel like because their parents are not educated and because they don't have a good understanding of what their religion says, and sometimes that could be interpreted in a way that these girls can't even say no. And in religion, in the Quran, it's not allowed. Consent has to be given, and they shouldn't be married off at a very young age. So, and also we talk a lot about the health consequences that these girls could have if they get married at a very young age. And that also ties to another problem in Afghanistan, which is maternal mortality. So these different topics, very important topics, and sometimes is a transformative experience for these girls, because this is the first time that they get to come together in a room and talk about such issues and discuss it with guest speakers. We also have guest speakers for them, and they have to do group activities. And so this program gives them a very good picture of they, in a sense that they have the rights as human beings and then as women, to be able to make their own choice and to be able to have the choice of not getting married at a young age, and to be able to have the right to continue to go to school. So it was a pilot program last year. So this year we're going to be doing the second phase in two other schools. So we already have about 250 students graduating from this curriculum or this program. And we estimate that more than 3,000 people have been indirectly impacted by our program, because we engage the local community through this program, especially the fathers and brothers and mothers, to be aware of these rights and the health consequences of such decisions for the girls. It's been widely celebrated by the girls, as well as mothers, and even in a lot of cases, fathers as well. Although, of course, it's going to take a little longer to be able to have much more impact in the community and to be able to have this thing as a norm, not as a exception. But so far it's been really good. A lot of students talk about how they're starting conversations with their families, with their mothers and parents when they're talked at for early marriage or things like that. So yeah, it's a quite successful program, and it's very close to my heart as well. So I'm sorry if I talk too much about this.
Not at all. It was fascinating. You know, you mentioned that part of the early marriage is an economic piece for the families. Can you explain that a little bit?
If the girls are not married at a young age, and they're allowed to go to school, and once they finish high school, they're able to apply for jobs and get jobs, for example, and so they're more able to be more independent, and that gives more independence to the girls, but also that contributes to the well-being of the family as well, because these girls will be able to contribute to the family. So that's one economic benefit. Another is that if these girls stay in school, more likely they won't be getting married when they're really young. And that also contributes to their health, their well-being, and thus contributes to the socioeconomic status.
Right. I think
so. In that sense, it includes the economic aspect. Yeah. A lot of times in Afghanistan, if the girl is married off, some compensation is given to the family.
Almost like a dowry.
Exactly. But okay. In Afghanistan, it's not a dowry. And in Islam, it's not allowed. So the only compensation that should be given is to the girl. And the girl has to choose how much money she wants from the family. And she has to keep it. But of course, the practice in Afghanistan is different.
Right.
You know, usually the money is taken by the father. It's requested by the father and it's taken by the father.
Right.
Of the girl. And it does contribute to the girls marrying at a young age. But I think the money is not as much, especially because Afghanistan is a much poorer country. So it's, I think it's mostly, even when families do practice this, it's because they want their girls to be secured. Their future has to be secured because they think that by marrying them off to a husband, they're better off.
Right, okay,
because
that
their
sense.
Future is secured. Yes,
that makes sense. So it must be very empowering, liberating for them to realize that they can actually say no to this and have it mean something.
Exactly. I feel like to be able to know about your rights and to be able to know that what happens to your body when you're so young and you're getting married, I think that completely changes a person and the way they see things and the way they. Especially the girls, the way they see the practice. So in a sense that many of them don't know their rights. And this is one way of, you know, being able to know about your rights. And then hopefully you'll be able to stand for those rights for yourself.
Right. Now, is there much, I don't know what the word would be, is there much pushback against it? Because you are, it's seeming like you're trying to change some fairly deep-rooted customs, and I'm just wondering if there is a group within there that is looking at you going, you can't change this because this is who we are and what we do.
That's a very good question. So far we haven't received a pushback, and I think it's mostly because of the region we work in and the community we work in. As I told you before, it's a community that are refugees that came back to the country. So they're a little more open to these different ideas being pushed at them or thrown off at them. So it's a little different picture than the rest of the country. But at the same time, I feel like because they're students and because it's a more of an educational program, we didn't receive as much backlash or we don't have any backlash. But I think the hardest thing is in order to make sure that this practice doesn't exist, it's very important to work with fathers and brothers and also religious and community leaders. And I think that's what we find a little more challenging because either we don't have much time with them to be able to explain our concerns, or sometimes they might not be even open to some extent to talking about such issues. But I think overall, because our program is so educational and because it's a it's mostly with the students. We have been, our pilot program was very successful and we didn't receive any backlash from the community. Actually, it was very widely celebrated by the school community, by the principals, by the fathers, and especially by the mothers.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Yeah. And so is this something that's just automatically you're enrolled in?
No, actually, we only take certain amount number of students in each class. So we have, so as I said before, we work with school students from 5th grade till 12th grade. So we would work, for example, 1 month with 12th graders, and we only can work with up to 25 students. So 22 to 25 students, and we can only have that number, and the rest we can hold. And yes, the program has become very popular, and a lot more girls want to be part of it, but to make sure that the quality of the program is good, we only take a certain amount of students. And hopefully, if we get more funding and we expand the program, then we will be able to reach out to a much larger group of students and girls.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned that part of your funding comes in Washington. And where all do you get your funding for these programs?
Yeah, we do fundraising programs. People donate on different websites, you know, even through our website. And, you know, sometimes we reach out to people that we know are interested in Afghanistan or working with Afghanistan. So, it's a lot of different groups and, you know, partnerships and things like that. So it's working with very, very good-hearted people, very right. generous people to right. make this all happen.
And I would imagine that if anybody, you know, if anybody listening wanted to donate, they could just go like to your website and make a donation?
Exactly. They can go to saharaeducation.org and they can make a direct donation there. It's important for us as an organization to see that because Afghanistan is a very young country, so 47% of Afghan population is under the age of 15. That's one of the youngest countries in the world.
Holy cow.
So, exactly. So some estimates and some stats show that by 2020, an average age in the U.S. will be, you know, 40. In Pakistan, it would be 25. In India, it would be 29 or something like that. But in Afghanistan, the average age would be 20 or 18. So it's a very young country, and you can see the need for education in these efforts to be able to build schools, send girls to school, especially girls, because I'm talking about girls because they're a marginalized group, but anybody, girls and boys, to be able to go to school, to gain skills, and to be able to contribute to the economy they're not exposed to other extreme political views, for example, or violence that's been going on in Afghanistan, political ideologies. So I think it's very, very important for our work. So thanks for people out there supporting us and supporting organizations like us. So keep supporting us because Afghanistan is still a very fragile state. If you read the humanitarian aid that it needs, it's only second to Syria. And if you compare them, that's pretty, Afghanistan is a very dire situation. So
is that just because of all the war and everything that's going on in the south?
Most of the fightings are in the south, but also they're in different parts of Afghanistan, even in the north. Recently, a lot of attacks have been in the north. The capital has always also been under a lot of attacks. Like recently, there have been attacks on the parliament. The Supreme Court was about 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago. There was an attack on the Supreme Court. So it's been a pretty fragile state. A lot of civilian casualties have been happening. This year has been the highest, 2016 report of the UN shows the highest number. About 600,000 people are displaced every time violence happens or every time fightings between Taliban, the government forces happen. About 1,700 people every day are displaced. So in 2016, 600,000 people within Afghanistan were displaced from their villages or their towns because of fightings. And that creates a lot of poverty and homelessness for these people. And that can tell you a lot about how fragile the state of Afghanistan is and the people in that country. So I guess that's what I want viewers to realize, that despite all these challenges, we still have had some success. Women's rights have improved. Education has improved. Literacy has increased. It used to be 17% or so during the Taliban. Now it's about 48 or over 50% now. So there's been a lot of progress, but still it's a fragile state and needs a lot of support. So yeah, I hope people follow what's been going on in Afghanistan and do contribute to the progress there.
Right.
Because the people have suffered a lot.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, there are two things kind of going through my head. One, with it being such a young country and with education literacy on the rise as it is, given a few years, there's going to be some really big changes happening in that country.
Exactly. And it is possible with all the support that so far we have receiving, but if we can receive even more support in Afghanistan, this progress could be, you know, even better and at a larger scale.
The one thing that always gets to me, and it sounds like it's similar here, is with communities, countries that have so much hardship and are living to a degree in fear and, with, like you say, being displaced and homeless, there is an overall sense of just hope at the bottom that they're continually pulling themselves up and trying to make life better. And it sounds like it's the same there.
Exactly. And I think that's what keeps people going, despite all the challenges that I have talked throughout this podcast with you. Still, there's been a lot of progress, as I mentioned before. And that's because they have had hope, you know. These girls, for example, from our experience, I guess my experience as working for this organization, to be able to see these girls go to school without fear and return home smarter and wiser, and to have the chance to flourish and be inspired at school and then become an inspiration to others, that's because they have hope.
Right.
And that keeps them going. And hope can be easily given from one person to another. Like, I could be I could give hope just because I'm working in this organization and we give some support, you know. And every individual, doesn't matter which part of the world they live in, could always give hope to one another, to live better and better and be kinder to one another. That's how we live safer, all of us.
Absolutely. That's a great statement right there. You know, I guess one last question for you. For you, outside of your job, what does it mean for you to be involved with the company?
So I'm from Afghanistan, and I can't see myself doing anything but working with these young students and young girls in Afghanistan to be able to go to school. So it means a lot to me as an Afghan to be able to contribute to the people who have suffered so much, but also have such high hopes and give so much room to improve and to become, to change the state that they live in. So for me, I feel like it's an honor to be able to be in a position and to have the privilege to be able to have some impact on their life. And at the same time, I get inspired every day by working with these women, especially these girls and women, who despite so many challenges are ready to participate in the programs, to give their best, and they just inspire me every day. And I feel like I consider myself the luckiest person to be able to have that chance.
I'd really like to thank Malahat for taking the time for the interview. You can find more information about Sahar at sahareducation.org. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Altruistically Speaking. You can find us online at altruisticallyspeaking.com, on Instagram, Altruistically Speaking, same on Facebook. You can also find us on iTunes. And while you're there, if you feel like it, give us a rating and review. It really does help other people find us. Until next time, we're going to leave you with Jason Fuller-Beatty and Weather Vane. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week.